I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's February 2nd, and we have a lot to talk about. Every week, I try to keep you updated on the status of clinical trials or new FDA approvals for MS disease-modifying therapies. But I hope you aren't just waiting for the next pharmaceutical MS intervention to be announced, because science has shown us that non-pharmaceutical interventions can deliver big benefits to people living with MS. And one of those non-pharmaceutical interventions that has been shown to be very effective is exercise. But research has also shown that people living with MS tend to be less active than people in the general population. So to provide the MS community with fact-based guidance for promoting exercise and lifestyle physical activity, the National MS Society convened a group of experts to develop exercise and physical activity recommendations for all people with MS, regardless of their ability level. Joining me to talk about these exercise recommendations, along with some of the real benefits that exercise produces for people living with MS, is Dr. Nora Fritz. Dr. Fritz is a board-certified neurologic physical therapist and an assistant professor in the physical therapy program, the Department of Healthcare Sciences, and Department of Neurology at Wayne State University School of Medicine, where she's also the director of the Neuroimaging and Neurorehabilitation Laboratory. Also joining me is Judy Boone. Judy is an MS warrior who, I promise, you definitely want to meet. Judy was diagnosed with MS in 2007, and she's successfully made exercise a part of her everyday lifestyle, and it's changed her life. But before we get to my conversations with Dr. Nora Fritz and Judy Boone, there are a few other things that you should know about. Over the past few weeks, there's been a lot of curiosity, some concern, and just a ton of questions from people living with MS about the COVID-19 vaccines. And if you haven't had a chance to listen to episode 177 of Real Talk MS, I'd strongly encourage you to do so. That episode of the podcast was released just a couple of weeks ago, and for the entire episode, we had Dr. Nancy Sicott answering your questions about the vaccines and their impact on people living with MS, their interactions with disease-modifying therapies, and lots of other relevant questions. As chair of the MS Society's National Medical Advisory Committee, Dr. Sicott led the expert task force that the Society convened to develop the COVID-19 vaccine guidance for people living with MS. And I'll be sure to include a link to that episode in today's show notes. But before the COVID-19 vaccines received their FDA approval and were made available, a research team at the University of Washington's Department of Rehabilitation Medicine conducted a nationwide survey of people living with MS to measure their willingness to receive a COVID-19 vaccination once one became available. And the results of the survey show that 66%, or two-thirds of the survey participants, reported a willingness to obtain a future COVID-19 vaccination, while about 15% of the participants indicated that they were unwilling to receive a vaccination. Having a greater willingness to get vaccinated was associated with having a higher level of education and holding a higher perception of the risk of getting COVID-19. The survey participants also reported that they were accessing information about COVID-19 from a variety of sources. About one-third of the survey participants indicated they were getting their information about the virus from healthcare providers. Both healthcare providers and the National MS Society had the highest perceived trustworthiness for COVID-19 information. And the perceived trustworthiness of the sources of COVID-19 information was highly associated with vaccine willingness. I think it's interesting to see how, very early in the pandemic, the willingness to receive a COVID-19 vaccine was not universal among people living with MS. And that willingness to get vaccinated was associated with education level, their perceived risk of getting COVID-19, and their trust in the sources they turn to for information about COVID-19. I can only add that my very unscientific scan of hundreds of social media posts over the last several weeks leads me to conclude that those percentages of people willing to be vaccinated and unwilling to be vaccinated probably haven't changed very much. And that really presents a serious public health challenge that will also manifest itself as an economic challenge, because the MS community, our country, the world won't be able to move forward until we get these COVID-19 vaccines into people's arms. That's why you'll hear me reminding you over the next several months about the importance of getting your information about MS, about COVID-19, and by the way, just about everything else, from credible, reliable sources. Because this University of Washington survey tells us that when it comes to your willingness to receive the COVID-19 vaccine, the more you rely on credible sources for your information, the better your decision-making becomes. If you'd like to review the details of the University of Washington study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. Stem cell therapy is another hot topic that's always under discussion throughout the MS community. And this past November, the National MS Society's National Medical Advisory Committee published their recommendations on autologous hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, or AHSCT, for people with relapsing forms of MS who failed to respond to disease-modifying therapies. Now, newly published findings from a research team in Italy provide further evidence that AHSCT is effective in preventing disability progression and maintaining disease remission over a period of several years. Researchers in Italy have been using AHSCT since the late 1990s to treat people with MS who weren't responding to standard disease-modifying therapies. And the researchers have published a case series examining the outcomes of 210 people with MS who received these stem cell transplants from 1997 to 2019. Nearly all of these people were living with either relapsing remitting MS or active secondary progressive MS, and these findings show that after 10 years, 65.5% of this group had experienced no worsening of disability. And that percentage actually increases to 71% when researchers only look at people with relapsing remitting MS. The study also showed that 3 people had died within 100 days of receiving AHSCT, but since 2007, there had been no reported deaths. So growing evidence continues to support the findings of the MS Society's National Medical Advisory Committee that autologous hematopoietic stem cell transplantation is a viable and effective treatment option for people with relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis who demonstrate substantial breakthrough disease activity despite treatment with high-efficacy disease-modifying therapy. And as a reminder, the best candidates for this procedure are likely people who are younger than 50 years of age, who have had MS for 10 years or less. If you'd like to review the details of the Italian study, you'll find a link in today's show notes, and I'll also include a link to the MS Society's recommendations for AHSCT to treat multiple sclerosis. Part of eliminating inequities in healthcare relies on increasing diversity in clinical trials, and MS presents a perfect example of why this is important. We know that African Americans who are living with MS often face a more severe disease course, so it's particularly important to have African American participants in clinical trials that are designed to measure the efficacy of potential MS disease-modifying therapies. Now, historically, accomplishing this goal has not proven to be easy. So the MS Minority Research Engagement Partnership Network developed a web-based survey to research the impressions, concerns, and preferences for clinical trials among people with MS. Of the 2,599 survey participants, 2,111 were white, 215 were African American, and 188 were Hispanic. And analyzing the results of their survey, the research team reported strong support for research across racial and ethnic groups. However, minority groups registered concerns regarding trust, receiving poor quality care, employment issues, health insurance, and even legal status. Compared to white survey respondents, African American and Hispanic survey participants were more concerned about being used by a research team. Hispanic participants were more concerned about research participation carrying risks to their legal status. And both Hispanic and African American survey participants said they were more likely to participate in a study that would benefit their own racial or ethnic group. Finally, a top concern across all the survey respondents was not being fully informed about the research. These represent the kinds of problems that we can fix. And demonstrating how research teams have addressed these concerns is going to have a direct impact on how diverse future clinical trials might be. At the beginning of January, my guest was Sarah Loud, the CEO of iConquerMS, and we talked about the value and importance of people-powered MS research. I think it's worth pointing out that this research was not only suggested, but it was driven forward by people who are living with MS as part of the work that iConquerMS does. And if you'd like to find out more and get involved with research that puts you at the center, I'll include a link to this research study as well as a link to iConquerMS in today's show notes. One of the things that research has shown us is that exercise, even everyday lifestyle physical activity, delivers real benefits to people living with MS. In a moment, we'll meet my first guest, Dr. Nora Fritz, and we'll find out what those benefits are, and we'll also talk about the National MS Society's new exercise recommendations for everyone living with MS, regardless of their ability level. I think most of us have gotten the message that exercise and physical activity are good for just about everyone. And research has shown that exercise and lifestyle physical activity are also good for people living with MS, not only in terms of their general health, but it turns out that exercise has been shown to improve the quality of life while helping to manage some MS symptoms. Joining me today is Dr. Nora Fritz, a board-certified neurologic physical therapist and an assistant professor in the Physical Therapy Program, Department of Healthcare Sciences, and Department of Neurology at Wayne State University School of Medicine, where she's also the director of the Neuroimaging and Neurorehabilitation Laboratory. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Fritz.
Thank you so much. My pleasure to be here.
I thought we could start our conversation with a couple of definitions. Can you explain the definition and the difference between lifestyle activity and exercise?
Sure. Lifestyle physical activity is those activities that you do throughout your day, whether they're planned or unplanned, that include leisure activities, occupational, like work-related activities, and even household activities like chores. But importantly, these are done at least a moderate to a vigorous intensity. And we typically look for the accumulation of about 30 minutes of these types of activities throughout the day. This differs a little bit from exercise, which is a leisure time physical activity that is performed repeatedly over an extended period of time, which is what we generally see with exercise training. But importantly, it has a specific goal or external objective. Usually this is improving fitness or health or some sort of functional performance. And then importantly, these differ from rehabilitation, which is where we look to regain or maintain optimal physical function and promote independence by working with a rehabilitation specialist.
A moment ago, I mentioned that people living with MS can benefit from lifestyle, physical activity, and exercise. Can you talk about what some of those benefits are?
Sure. There's a lot of different and exciting benefits that exercise can have for persons with MS. Importantly, it can help with management of symptoms. So we see improvements in fatigue, quality of life, cognition, reduction in depression, increased participation in physical activities and daily activities, decreases in pain, better bladder control, and even better cardiovascular health. And then we have plenty of evidence to support that targeted exercise can also improve balance, range of motion, muscle strength, arm and hand function. It can decrease leg spasms, increase respiratory function, and overall functional capacity for participating in exercise.
Well, because of some of the things that you've just mentioned, the National MS Society convened a group of experts to develop exercise and lifestyle physical activity recommendations for people living with MS. And this group determined that everyone with MS, regardless of their ability level, should incorporate exercise or lifestyle physical activity into their daily routine. Can you explain what this means and maybe address how people living with progressive MS, some of whom may have significant physical challenges, should interpret this recommendation?
Sure. So one of the great things about this recommendation is that it's broken down by EDSS level. This is that expanded disability status scale, or the scale that most neurologists use for looking at MS disability. And it ranges anywhere from 0 to 10. Most people with MS will realize that they've done this in their neurologist's office, whether they knew it was called or not. But it typically involves a walking test, sensory testing, muscle strength, an eye exam. And the neurologist is able to assign a number based upon this. And 0 to about 4.5 would be a mild disability. And then when we look at maybe 5 to 6.5, these are individuals who are still able to walk but might use an assistive device like a cane or a walker, maybe have some limitations in how far they can walk or have difficulty transferring in and out of chairs or from the ground. And then above a 7, these individuals might have more difficulty with transferring and getting around on their own. And so these new guidelines from the National MS Society really break down the recommendations and exercise based on where people fall on this EDSS scale. And so wherever you fall, exercise is beneficial, and we want to think about incorporating 4 different kinds of exercise. These would be things like aerobic exercise. This is exercise that makes your heart rate go up and makes you feel out of breath. Resistance exercise, which is strength training to get your muscles stronger. Flexibility or stretching that helps keep muscles elongated or loose, and then neuromotor or balance exercise, which would challenge your balance and your coordination and your agility. So regardless of where you fall on the scale, kind of incorporating elements of these 4 areas would be important.
Should people living with MS consult either their neurologist or get a referral to a rehabilitation specialist before they begin an exercise program?
So I think if you have not been a regular exerciser or you've kind of lived a rather sedentary lifestyle, it's very important to talk with your doctor before you begin an exercise program. And getting a referral to a rehabilitation specialist could be particularly helpful. This individual can assess your baseline, where you are right now, make sure that you are targeting muscles or areas that are weak and to strengthen them and stretching those that might be tight, so that you don't have any injuries as a result of starting this activity. They can also give you a wellness program to get you started down the best route that would likely to keep you adherent to the exercises in the long term, and how to progress them over time. So I think that can be a really helpful suggestion. Your doctor is well versed in any comorbidities that you might have, especially cardiovascular comorbidities that would be important to know about before you start an intensive exercise program. So that's always good advice.
Fatigue is a symptom that impacts the majority of people living with MS. So to a lot of folks, the idea of exercise almost seems antithetical. How should someone approach exercise while also being mindful of the realities of MS fatigue?
That's a great question, and it's one that I hear a lot. So it does sound contradictory that exercising can improve fatigue, because typically what people are experiencing is that they're so tired, how are they supposed to exercise? And so the advice that I give is just to start slow. So we're not asking for someone to go from exercising 0 minutes to exercising 30 minutes in, over the course of one day. We're thinking about going from 0 minutes to maybe 1 minute or 2 minutes a day and staying there for a period of time and working our way up to the recommended amount, which is a 30-minute bout. So when you first start an exercise program, you can expect to feel a bit fatigued. And typically this is a result of deconditioning. So if you haven't been exercising, you're going to feel tired from doing some movement with your body. And that would happen regardless of whether you had MS or not. So we have to sort of fight through that first week of a new program where we're working through the deconditioning period. But over the course of, say, 8 weeks, we can expect to see improvements in fatigue from a targeted exercise training program, particularly one that incorporates the aerobic component, the component that gets your heart rate up, and resistance, so strength training. There's been a good amount of evidence of studies that have come out, including studies from my own lab, to show that combining aerobic and resistance training helps to improve MS fatigue.
What about other issues that people living with MS frequently face, like balance issues or sensitivity to heat? How do these kinds of symptoms factor into or affect someone's exercise program?
Sure. So heat sensitivity is a big one. Not every person with MS experiences this, but a good amount do. So you should expect that if you're exercising, your core body temperature is going to rise. And when that happens, if you have sensitivity to heat, you may experience the resurgence of old symptoms or feelings of fatigue. And this happens because the nerves in your system, as your body temperature heats up, tend to sort of short circuit on you. And so what's important is that you stay nice and cool when you're exercising so that we can prevent this. So you can do that by exercising in a really cool environment, like an air-conditioned gym or outdoors when it's chilly, or you can drink lots of ice water to keep your body temperature down, or wear a cooling garment or cooling vest, and that will help with those symptoms. If it does happen to you, you want to make sure to take a break, let your body temperature come back down before you reassess whether you can continue. So that's one thing to think about with the heat sensitivity. With regard to balance, so making sure to exercise in a safe environment. So whether that includes doing your exercise with a rehab professional or a trainer who can spot you and make sure that you maintain your balance, or at a countertop or a surface where you feel like you can hold on to it if you start to lose your balance, that's important. You want to be very realistic about your balance. So if you feel like you have any issues at all, riding a regular bicycle for your exercise may not be the best option for you, because that could lead to a fall that could be injurious. So thinking about things like stationary bikes or rowers or even treadmills, where you can wear the safety harness. So wanting to be sure that we're safe about our balance.
For many people, the most challenging aspect of exercising is just sticking with it. In fact, the entire gym and health club industry is sort of based on the understanding that most people don't stick with a fitness program. Otherwise, their locker rooms couldn't be built large enough. So what are some tips for really making exercise a long-term part of your daily routine?
Yeah, this is a great question. And there's not too many easy answers, but I think the top things that I would say are, number one, pick activities that you like. So if you do not like walking or running, don't do those exercises. Choose something different. If you like swimming, do swimming. If you like cycling, do cycling. So choose exercises that you really like. I think that's number one. And number two is to find a buddy who can help to keep you accountable. So this might be your partner or a friend or someone that you met at the gym would be even better because they already go to your gym. But find someone who you like to hang out with so that it can be more like a social event. And the two of you can keep each other accountable. On days where you're not really feeling like it, that person can encourage you. And on other days, you can encourage them. So I think that's particularly important, is to find that support person.
Well, Dr. Nora Fritz, thank you for all you do to improve the quality of life for people living with MS, and thanks for talking with me today.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Now that we've heard from an expert, let's look at someone's actual lived experience. Judy Boone is an MS warrior who refuses to let MS get in her way. Judy was diagnosed with MS in 2007, and she has incorporated exercise into her daily routine in a major way. If you're looking for motivation and inspiration wrapped up in one amazing person, then I think you're in for a treat. In a moment, we'll meet my guest, Judy Boone. Judy Boone was diagnosed with MS in 2007, and since that time, she's become a major advocate for using health and wellness strategies to deal with her MS. Welcome to the podcast, Judy.
Thank you, John. I'm glad to be here.
Before we get started, let me ask, how are you doing in the midst of this pandemic?
I am actually doing great. I've just found a lot of great things to do while I am quarantined, and I have made very good use of this time. So I just don't have any complaints at all. I think it's time that I need it, like to get more rest and just to take some time just for me. So I have really, really made the best of it.
That is really refreshing to hear. What I'd like to do is maybe go back to 2007 when you received your MS diagnosis. I'm wondering, were you already into exercise and fitness?
I did exercise very little then, though. Not anything like I do today. Just every once in a while. But now, today, I make it a regular part of my routine. And I think mainly because I realize how much exercise helps me physically and mentally. With the MS pain, it just helps tremendously. And just mentally, just knowing that I'm doing this for my body and that it's helping me to live a better life has just made me really kind of fall in love with exercise, which I never in a million years thought I would do.
Well, you know, now there's a lot of evidence proving that exercise and physical activity are really beneficial to people living with MS. So what was it in the beginning that drew you to exercise?
It's exactly what you said, John. I actually read an article from the MS Society about the importance of exercise in MS. And I started to read it and I thought, well, you know, it can't hurt. So I just started slowly. I didn't start out doing a lot of the stuff that I do now. I mean, I just took it slow and I just realized how much it really did help me, how it made me sleep better. It just made me feel better. It made me focus on my MS a lot less. It just did so much for me. And it was just because I had read that article that it talked about diet and it talked about exercise. And that's what really, really got me on the path to making it a regular part of my routine.
Speaking of that routine, can you take us through what your typical fitness routine is like these days?
Yes, I exercise at least an hour a day, 5 to 6 days a week. And what I do is I do a lot of aerobic. I have a machine that's low impact that I actually talk to my doctors about using. I make sure that everything that I do is, you know, the doctors recommend me to do. And so I get on my aerobic machine for at least 35 to 40 minutes. And it's just a very low impact, but burns a whole lot of calories. And I get a lot of steps when I'm doing that. And I also get on my Total Gym. I have a Total Gym, so I do strength training at least 3 to 4 times a week. And that has helped me just to have so much strength in my legs, and I very seldom ever even have pain in my legs anymore. I just, enjoy doing that. And I also, just to get out of the house now because I'm quarantined, I always go for a walk every single day. So I go walking in the afternoon, another about 45 minutes to an hour. So I'm getting almost 2 hours a day of exercise right now, 5 to 6 days a week.
So I think it's great that you're mixing up both aerobic exercise and strength training. They're both really, really important. And in fact, for a lot of people, it's even a good idea to kind of rotate those two so that you give your muscle groups an opportunity to recover and rebound back. So maybe one day it's aerobics, one day it's strength training. But But you've been at this for a little while now, so I guess your endurance is got to be up there. What was your fitness routine like when you started? Do you remember?
Well, when I first got diagnosed with MS, I would maybe go walking some here and there. I did have a bike that I would use occasionally, but I mean, maybe I did 30 minutes of exercise, maybe twice a week, or maybe even just once a week before I was diagnosed with MS. It certainly has changed my life. MS has changed my life in a lot of positive ways, and that's definitely one of them, because I didn't see it as important as I do now since I've been diagnosed with MS.
You know, I've done close to 150 episodes of Real Talk MS. I've done close to 150 interviews, one for every single episode. And this is the first time I've ever heard someone say MS has done a lot of positive things in my life. Where do you get that mindset from?
When you get a diagnosis like that, at first you feel like my life is over. I won't be able to do anything that I used to do. It's just everything. It's just over for me. That's how you feel in the beginning. You have all these mixed emotions. But I have seen so many positive things. Just even the fact how I work so much harder for the things that I want. I just feel like, you know, just for my own self, when I want to accomplish something, I feel like, yeah, I may have to work a little bit harder now, but it just gives me so much satisfaction knowing that I know I can do this and I can accomplish this. And I feel like in my career, in my personal life, it has really, really made just so many positive differences. And I mean, I hate that I have MS. I wish I didn't have MS, but I don't think I would change a thing that's happened in my life because it's gotten me where I am today.
I've certainly heard the expression that when life gives you lemons, you try to make lemonade, but I think you've opened up a whole lemonade stand here.
It's taken different things to get here. And I'm just so thankful that, you know, one of the most important things I do believe is just finding things to be thankful for that you already have in your life just will make the biggest change and the biggest difference. It's just being grateful and being thankful for what you do have and what you can do, and then focus on the things that you feel like I can't do, or and you'll be surprised what you can accomplish.
Knowing what you know now, what sort of advice would you want someone to have shared with you back in 2007?
I would just encourage people to please just put yourself in a positive direction. Make sure that you, the resources that you are reading, that is reliable, and that, you know, that you look at people who have done well with MS, because everybody is different. And, you know, just the people who have lived a very good life, it takes work, and that they can do it too. It's attainable, and that they can accomplish that too. You know, and I think that that's part of how I did get to this point was I really put myself out there as far as being able to go to different programs. I made sure that I listened to people who had positive stories to tell. I mean, you know, I just felt like I needed to hear that. So a lot of the things that I did hear, even things like, you know, things that people have done, and I would look at people and say, well, you know, they don't even look like they have MS, and they've done this and they've done that. So those things did encourage me along the way.
Well, Judy Boone, by living your life out loud, you remind all of us that you might have MS, but MS sure doesn't have you.
Absolutely. And that is what I live by. That is it. That is it. MS. I have MS, but it does not have me. Absolutely.
Well, in my book, that qualifies you as an MS warrior. So thank you so much for being an example and a reminder for others about what's possible. And thanks for talking with me today.
Thank you, John. It's my pleasure.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/179. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. We've flipped those calendar pages. It's 2021, and that means that Walk MS 2021 is coming. And this year, Walk MS will meet you where you are to connect, celebrate, and make a difference like never before. You can learn more and register at nationalmssociety.org/walkms. I'll be walking, and I hope you're planning to join me this year. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.